Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss. I call shot
like a boss. In the gloss. Check out my lip gloss.
I only rock clear. On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson. I got
that. Good morning, everyone, and welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss, and next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. How are you, Carla?
Doing well. It's a lucky 7th Friday, May 7th. Here we go.
May 7th, and a lucky day for Ron Culver because he gets to be here with us behind the glass.
He looks more than thrilled.
Well, he's got a good day. There's a lot on the sports calendar, too, and we've got some great guests lined up over the next couple of hours here on the Boss and the Gloss. We'll talk to Dan Favoli. He is a pretty impressive guy. He knows all things NBA. He's an NBA writer for Bleacher Report. We'll have him in a couple of segments. And then later on, we'll have, Bob Garoli. He's a senior MLB writer for The Athletic. And then Charlie Polillo, a KFNC host in Houston, who has just been watching the Astros and the Yankees. So we've got
in person in Brooklyn.
Well, he's been up there, firsthand perspective of the Yankees and the Astros, who had a great series in New York this weekend.
If you call being booed every second great, but you know, they had to face it.
And of course the Astros come home with the win last night, and that was a great win. Jose Altuve busting out on his birthday. So you can see that comeback of Altuve. The Astros need his bat in that lineup to be very prolific.
And I think Altuve needed to send a message to the Yankees that you can boo, the louder you boo, the harder I'm going to hit. That was his first birthday home run, the age of 31. Dusty Baker asked him, have you ever hit a home run on your birthday? He said, no, went out and did it.
Today was the day.
Pretty great.
Or at least yesterday was the day.
Love me some Dusty Baker.
Yeah, so Yankees get the series, Astros get the final win, and beating Gerrit Cole, of course, the former Astro, is a big deal for the Astros. So Charlie Polillo from KFNC Houston will be with us next hour, and we've got a great lineup. But before we get to those guests, when we come back next segment, we're going to have to unpack this Aaron Rodgers situation.
Unpack?
Well,
very clever. Unpack the Packers.
He is packing his bags, I might say, to leave town. Another way to look at it. There are lots of reasons out there why he might be leaving, but you have unearthed the number one reason. And we will hear it from the gloss when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the boss.
And the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, everyone. And it's not every commercial break that you light up when you hear a commercial, but you lit up when you heard about Tub-O-Towels. That's one of your favorite products now.
I love Tub-O-Towels. So last night I'm getting ready for the show.
Yes.
I take out my headsets to charge them up. And I'm like, man, these things look... They've got makeup on them because, as you see, they're white and rose gold, as every girl's headset
they're
should be.
They're stunning headsets.
Aren't they?
Yes.
Like, well, you know why they're
stunning?
Because I took a little tub of towel situation, cleaned the entire thing. I mean, it got off makeup. It got off pen mark. You name it. Look at me. Shiny, sparkly. I'm ready to go.
You look
Thank you, Tub-O-Towels.
Yes, fresh. Thank you, Tub-O-Towels.
New O headphones.
Tub-O-Towels will clean any surface.
Love.
They're big and they are soft on the hands with aloe vera. Tub-O-Towels, you can find them.
Get the hard stuff.
Just
pen
about
and
anywhere.
Makeup.
Yeah.
Come on.
All right. I'm glad you're happy. You've done it well
happy.
With Tub-O-Towels. Now, somebody who is not happy, we've heard a lot about this week.
Very
month.
Nice segue.
Aaron Rodgers of the Packers, he wants out, and there are all kinds of rumors why. Certainly there's the idea that he was unhappy when Green Bay traded up to draft Jordan Love in the 2020 draft. Then there was the release of his receiver, Jake Kemerow, last September. He
a
was
a backup receiver.
A backup receiver, but Rodgers liked him, and they cut him. And then the idea was that Matt LaFleur ruined the relationship when he took the ball out of Rodgers' hands. And that was a big
decision. In a playoff game.
In a big playoff game. And really, when we go back to that game, I thought the Packers had the better team. I thought they were better than the Bucks. The Packers were at home, an incredible home field advantage at Lambeau. I thought the Packers were going to win that game. And that decision was a big moment in the game. They took the ball out of Rodgers' hand, and that might be a personal affront to Aaron Rodgers.
Sure. And this is a mess that even Tubba Towels might not be able to fix.
Can't clean that one up. Fair enough. But you have another reason why Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay.
I'm going to simplify it for everybody. I'm giving you my rose gold white headphone point of view, actually. Here.
A woman's perspective,
yes,
baby.
Yes, exactly. Okay, like, here's the real reason. We seem to all be forgetting that Aaron Rodgers is recently engaged.
He's in love.
He's in love. And he's going to be married to a very successful actress based in L.A. Named Shailene Woodley.
Shailene the Dream.
Okay. Shailene also has a house in Denver. So that's a plus.
Yep.
But let me tell you what. I would bet, I'd put money on it, that Shailene, and I'm going to add myself to this group, and I don't know many women who would be like, I am so fired up to live in Green Bay, Wisconsin, especially in the winter. This would be awesome. So I can go support my husband as I'm sitting in a frozen tundra. I'm sorry. She is an actress. And is there the social life she needs? Are the opportunities, all of that happening in Green Bay? I'm not thinking so. So, you know, while she may have said yes to the dress, she's saying a hard no to life in Green Bay. And Aaron Rodgers is saying, I've got a couple years left. This is my person. I don't need to be here. I'm a three-time MVP. I can get traded anywhere. And the Packers have given me all the reasons you just did. But the bottom line is, he's done.
It all comes back to a woman.
It comes back to a woman.
Well, and she seems very worthy of it. We looked her up. She's an attractive actress in L.A.
And very successful. She's got a great career.
Yeah, and logistically, how do they manage those careers? Green Bay, L.A. doesn't work. So, all right, that's certainly a reason. And that then thrust him back to when we talk about destinations and where Aaron Rodgers should land. You say she's got a house in Denver. Denver's a lot closer to L.A., so when she gets opportunities, she could hop on a plane and get out to L.A.
Flight.
So Denver.
And she's got a home base there.
Okay, well, Denver emerges as a pretty good place. I mean, it was already on the short list. They've got a ton of offensive weapons. I was like,
They in need of a quarterback?
And they have.
Oh, well,
they
fat, have, yes.
It's not quite what it was. When they went out and got Peyton Manning, they seemingly had everything but a quarterback. But they have a lot of tools.
They do.
Yet they lack a quarterback. So it's a really great opportunity for him to step in. The receiving core is great. That tight end Noah Fant is a guy who is emerging as a real player in the league. They've got a running game. And, of course, their defense has been stout. Yeah, that would make the Broncos an immediate contender in the AFC.
It would. Yes, it would.
It shows you.
And he will be, if he is traded, if Gutekunst does trade him, which that is a big if, and we're going to talk about that too. He's not going to an NFC team. He's not that crazy. He will send him to an AFC team.
Yeah, AFC
sure.
team makes sense. Denver then makes sense. I mean, it was so interesting this week, of course.
Gutekunst.
ESPN definitely. Tossed out the possibility of the Browns trading Baker Mayfield for Aaron Rodgers. It would have to be Baker Mayfield and some other capital. But I'll tell you what, you put Aaron Rodgers on that Browns team, and that Browns team suddenly becomes, in my mind, a Super Bowl contender. It's a different day, and it just shows you the vast divide between Aaron Rodgers and Baker Mayfield. Mayfield, maybe, if you squint hard enough and are optimistic enough, maybe Baker Mayfield is a rising star. Maybe one day he could ascend to elite level. But you put Aaron Rodgers on the Browns right now, with the defense they have and the draft they've had, I think that would put them right on the short list of Super Bowl contenders.
Well, you're right about that. And I think with Baker Mayfield, you know, the Cleveland fans got word of this and are vehemently opposed to this.
Yeah.
I mean, because you think of, you know, what was the last time they've seen Baker Mayfield? In the playoffs, after an 11-5 season, haven't seen the playoffs since 2002, and beating their rival Steelers. I mean, Baker Mayfield is beloved. But to me, you know, it's, yes, Aaron Rodgers makes Cleveland an immediate contender. There's no doubt about it with all the weapons Cleveland has had and the great draft that they just had. It is risky, however, to trade a young Baker who's in his 20s for a quarterback in his late 30s.
Yeah.
You know, there is risk to that. And there's also risk, if you look at the other side, it's now coming up, is Mayfield worth the price of a franchise quarterback?
Right. So they exercise his option, but then they've got to sit down with him now. I mean, at this moment, when the Cowboys had extra, well, they didn't have an option on Dak Prescott, but then when he was entering his last year of his rookie deal, there were all kinds of howls about sign him now, sign him long-term, do it here. Well, Baker Mayfield's in the exact same spot now, and the Browns have to make a long-term commitment to him. I presume they will, but there comes a lot of risk with that. Baker has been inconsistent. He's certainly shown flashes, but to sign him to one of the mega contracts that it will require at this point.
There's a risk in Cleveland either way that you look at.
Yeah, it would make me a little queasy.
Yep, agreed.
I do find it fascinating, though, that Browns fans, staring at the possibility of bringing in Aaron Rodgers and becoming an immediate Super Bowl contender this year with Aaron, would question whether they should do it. And what I think
they're
that,
loyal. Well, they've got someone that's taken them out of the basement, that, and they haven't forgotten.
Not only has he taken them out of the basement and helped them get to be a better team, that's certainly true. I also think part of it is that when he was drafted by the Browns, he embraced that opportunity. He embraced the city of Cleveland.
Nobody before him had done that.
And that's what makes him so meaningful, right?
Very true.
Cleveland fans are looking at it and saying, wait a minute.
No. He loved us first.
Yes, he loved us first. And he stayed with us, and he's embraced us. And all these other quarterbacks we ever thought or brought in, you know, look, every year it seemed the Browns were drafting high, drafting a quarterback. And nobody wanted to go to Cleveland, but Baker said, yeah, I'm ready to go, and I'm going to sign on to Cleveland, and I'm going to make a mark in that town, and we're going to make the Browns Super Bowl contenders. He's won the heart and minds of that franchise.
And credit him for that. I mean, nobody else embraced that. And he had, you know, three coaches in 3 years and, you know, still has all the Cleveland love. Now, to go back to Rodgers for a minute, you know, the latest headlines were that Rodgers is in a group text with teammates and compared Brian Gutekunst to Jerry Krause, the very polarizing, you know, brilliant mind of the Bulls, but incredibly polarizing. And Michael Jordan couldn't stand him and, you know, very embattled situation there.
Yeah, they've all watched The Last Dance, I guess, when it came out.
Oh, yeah,
right?
They have. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers says, I'm adamant on not returning unless Gutekunst gets fired.
Mm.
Woo. And no one's denying it. Have you seen any denying? It's funny. We're not really hearing from Aaron Rodgers himself, but we are hearing from great sources around here, including dropping this bomb the day of the draft. But there's no denying it from anywhere. And if Aaron Rodgers' camp did not want this kind of information out, there would be, this is not true, stay tuned. We're not hearing a thing.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to talk to Dan Favoli. He is an NBA writer for Bleacher Report. And we're going to ask him whether the Nets and the Lakers, who were the favorites to meet in the championship, are flailing down the stretch. Can they? We're going to ask him, can they recover in time to make a deep playoff run and get back on the top? Dan Favoli next when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And now joining us on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line, drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Dan Favoli now joining us. He's an NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Dan, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's begin with the Lakers. They are skidding here and at risk of having to be in the play-in. How concerned should the Lakers be?
I think they should be very concerned. It seems like Anthony Davis' back is going to be fine, which is good. Frank Vogel also said that LeBron's absence right now isn't medically related, so that should be a good sign for them. But if you're in play-in territory or even if you're in this area, you're just increasing the difficulty of the run you have to make to get back to the finals. And finishing in the play-in would be the worst-case scenario, obviously, because all of a sudden you're setting up this one-game matchup perhaps with the Golden State Warriors and adding a level of difficulty to that path back to the finals. And even as it stands, you know, if you just finished sixth, you forfeited home court advantage at least through the first round of the playoffs, and probably longer if everything goes chalk. And now you're at a point too where it's, well, we'll take LeBron a while to ramp back up. How about Dennis Schroeder when he comes out of the league's health and safety protocols? They have a bunch of other players, including Anthony Davis, who are banged up right now. So while this team is still talented at full strength to get back to come out of the West and get back to the finals, their path there just seems to be getting increasingly difficult with every different report, with every different game that they play.
You know, speaking of levels of concern, you know, I want to talk to you about the Brooklyn Nets. My gosh, what a level of concern do we have there? Like, for example, even off the court, Kyrie's situation, fined again for the second time, even the $35,000 is nothing for him. But to me, it was more of what he said, including saying, I don't talk to pawns. My attention is worth more. What do you give about the Brooklyn Nets, what's going on here? And do you think this kind of behavior, let alone the injury situation with the big three, with the Harden and Durant, how is that going to affect them? How could that possibly affect them down the road? And do you see them able to run the table in the East with all this going on?
The Kyrie off the court stuff, I don't think ends up being a big deal for them. They have been, that's been a thing all year. And I do think that Steve Nash has done a good job of answering questions about it to where he won't dig deep into it and make that a separate distraction as it could become. The bigger issue, I think, is just on the court, how healthy will they be? Mm-hmm. We've seen Kevin Durant deal with a bunch of different lower body injuries this year. And then more importantly, James Harden still out with that hamstring injury right now. He did say that he should be back before the playoffs, but those are fickle injuries. And if he's only going to get a couple games under his belt before the postseason, there could be a ramp-up period for him. I think we've seen how important he is to this team because he is the one that's committed to effectively running point guard for them when all the stars are on the court. They're playing under 500 basketball right now, and Kyrie and KD are in the lineup without James Harden. And so at full strength, this team is still terrifying on paper, and I absolutely think that they could come out of the East, but between wondering how is James Harden going to look when he comes back, what does the big three even look like together since they've just played in three games with each other, and then the overall defense, specifically when you're looking at the front court rotation, who's going to be closing games at the five, they do have a bunch of question marks there, and so I do not think they are the given to come out of the East that many have painted them as.
And Dan, do you see any similarities? You know, last year the Clippers, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard had a similar situation, had hardly played due to game management and other things, had hardly played any games together, and it really showed up in the playoffs. I mean, they had that surprising early exit. Do you see this issue with the big three not having court time together and really Harden saying he's very confident he's going to come back for the playoffs? But as you said, this is a very precarious injury with a hamstring strain, and it was re-aggravated, you know, 2 weeks ago. I mean, do you think it could be a similar situation, or is this three so dynamic that they don't need that time together on the court to succeed?
I think the Clippers are an interesting parallel. Familiarity is important, and these formations of this magnitude, when you're dealing with such a huge level of star power, they can take time. They're not always seamless like it was for LeBron and Anthony Davis last year. I think you also make a good point that they're so dynamic. Maybe it doesn't matter. They're all three so good one-on-one that you don't really necessarily need a flow or synergy on the court. But you're entering a postseason, and you've played in just seven games together. And on top of that, the reason you've missed all these games is because the most important of the three, in James Harden, has missed a bunch of time. I do think that could absolutely come back to haunt you. And they're just, again, their star power is so high that they can certainly overcome it, but there is that potential for things to, I wouldn't say go wrong and see them implode, but to where they're not the best version or the actualized version of this team that everybody saw when the James Harden trade was first pulled off.
We're talking to Dan Favale. He's an NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Okay, finishing out on the East, we've discussed the Nets. The 76ers will likely end up with the first seed. Let's play it out. How do those teams match up if they do, in fact, meet in the conference championship?
I think when you look at the East right now, I would absolutely expect two of those teams to be in the conference finals. Just I don't see that other imminent threat below them, even though Miami can certainly maybe punch above its weight, perhaps Boston too. If Philly's the one seed, they have the luxury then of you don't have to play Brooklyn or Milwaukee, so you would expect them to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's interesting when you're looking at how Brooklyn matches up with either of them. I think the Phillies uniquely built to give them more of a problem on defense, because you have Ben Simmons, you have Matisse Thybulle, you have Danny Green with Joel Embiid on the back line. And so if that ends up being the conference final series, that gets super interesting. And it might come down to, can Philly generate enough half-court offense, specifically in crunch time, since that's one of the largest concerns with those teams. And looking at the Bucks and Nets, but specifically in what would be, you know, presumably a second-round matchup, Milwaukee's also built to sort of disrupt on defense. I don't know the same level of one-on-one defenders, just because of how good Ben Simmons is in Philly, but between Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the way that they've shown they can protect the rim in general under Mike Budenholzer, they can make life difficult on Brooklyn, and they probably have more one-on-one scoring juice than Philly. And so I do think that, you know, if either of those two teams went up against the Nets right now, I don't know that I would pick them in a landslide, but I might be more inclined to pick them to come out against Brooklyn in seven games.
We're talking with Dan Favoli, national NBA expert and writer for Bleacher Report. Dan, I'd love to get your thoughts on the NBA's MVP race this year. You know, I'm looking at Giannis, Steph, Jokic, Joel. You're the expert. Tell us who you like.
I think to win, it's become clear that Jokic is going to do so in a landslide, and I think we've gotten to the point where he clearly deserves it. He checks just every conceivable box when you're looking at the numbers, when you're looking at the storyline boost, because of now he's had to help carry the Nuggets without Jamal Murray following his injury. Denver is also in the top four spot in the West, so you really can't look at their record and say they're not good enough when they're 22 games over 500 at this point. So I think he's going to be the clear number one. It'll be interesting to see who winds up in number two. Has Joel Embiid played in enough games? You mentioned Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think there will be voter fatigue for him, but he has, sure, to me, in my estimation, been one of the three most valuable players in basketball this season. And so I do expect the top three to shake out in some form there, where you have Jokic at one, probably Embiid at two, and maybe Giannis at three, with the top five being rounded out with some combination of Steph, Luka Doncic, and maybe Damian Lillard able to sneak his way in there.
Dan, we've got about two more minutes, and we talked about the East. There might be three teams who have a shot at the championship when you include the Bucks, 76ers, and Nets. How many teams in the West can you legitimately claim have a chance to win it all?
I think you can go with five. The Lakers might be the riskiest proposition in that group right now, but if LeBron and AD are going to be on the court, you have to throw them in there. The Clippers have been playing better of late. The Jazz and the Suns have the two best records in the league. And then you look at the Nuggets, where they do lose Jamal Murray, but Michael Porter Jr. has played so well. They have the MVP in Jokic. If they get Will Barton back, if they get Monte Morris back, and they're dealing with a rotation that's closer to full strength, I still think they're right there. And so, you know, we can order those teams in different ways. I think the Suns, the Clippers, and the Lakers are probably the most dangerous of those five right now, but I do think all five are absolutely capable of coming out of the West and winning the title.
So I've got one more minute. I want to ask you, well, in the East, you've got Celtics, Heat, even Hawks, I guess, battling to stay out of the play-in. And over in the West, you've got the Lakers and the Blazers battling. Who does not make it? Who are you thinking has to fall to seven and have to play into the tournament?
I think in the East, it's going to end up being Miami. Their offense has been, Jimmy Butler's been spectacular, but their offense overall has been this unpleasant mystery box all year, and so I think that Boston will edge them out for that sixth spot. And then in the West, I do think it's going to end up being, you know, the Blazers and the Warriors as those 7 and 8 teams, with also the Grizzlies and the Spurs in that playoffs. I just can't, if we're going to expect LeBron to play at all, I just can't imagine the Lakers falling all the way to the seventh seed.
Yep. Okay. Dan Favoli, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your being with us.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me. Take care.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to talk to Charlie Polillo. He is a radio show host for KFNC Houston. He is a baseball maven, so we will talk a little MLB with him, including the fact that he was just on site in New York watching the Yankees-Astros series. It'll be Charlie Polillo when we come back here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
the Boss.
In the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Keeping your car clean is simple with inexpensive maintenance that can help keep your car looking like new. O'Reilly Auto Parts has car wash and wax for painted services, as well as interior care products for leather and vinyl, carpet and upholstery cleaner. Visit O'Reilly for Clean Car Month, and their professional parts people will make sure you get the best detailing products for your vehicle. Shop your local store or online at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is one of the mavens of MLB, Charlie Palillo, radio show host on KFNC Houston. Charlie, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Good morning to you both from the Big Apple, as it works out.
Oh, you're still there, lucky guy.
This is a
for another couple hours anyway.
Yeah, roadshow edition of Charlie Palillo. How about that? So you've gotten, did you go to the whole series? Did you see all the games this week?
Yes.
And you, so you've seen the Yankees, Astros. You were there with all the hate being poured down on the Astros. Give us the lay of the land. What was the atmosphere like in the Bronx?
Yeah, it was the Bronx Zoo baseball version. New York, we all get it. I'm a native New Yorker. It's the toughest city on earth. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. But even by New York standards, I thought it was over-the-top crass. Not just because you had children at the game, but a general level of decency and civility. The lines were crossed with the relentlessness. I guess one can be impressed by the tenacity of the fan base with the profane chants, the vulgar chants through the game. And, you know, not that I have virgin ears or not that any other fan base should be sanctimonious in Houston or anywhere else. There are unseemly chants directed toward officials or toward hated players on rivals. But the relentlessness of it, the savoring, the crudeness of it, I thought was a bit much. The Yankees win the series 2 out of 3, but the Astros, if you're only as good as your last game, or he who laughs last, Jose Altuve, of all people, on his birthday, no less, with the 3-run homer, so at least the Astros salvaged the 3 games in the series. Basically, it's a couple of 500 teams right now that hope to be winning their divisions, but maybe come September, they're indirectly, meaning not head-to-head the last month of the season, slugging it out for a wild card spot.
You know, Charlie, I love that you mentioned Jose's homer on his birthday. I know Dusty Baker had asked him, have you ever hit one on your birthday? Nope. Went out and did it, and the embrace in the locker room was just a beautiful thing to watch if you're an Astros fan, for sure. I agree with you about the New York fans, and I even heard a lot of New York media saying it's time for the Yankees to stop their whining. Like, let's move on from this. Do you think that a lot of it, obviously everyone's going to the cheating scandal because that was a factor, and they took the Yankees to 7 games and went on to win the World Series. But honestly, do you think more of it is them feeling like Jose Altuve stole the MVP from their beloved Aaron Judge?
That's, to me, the secondary component. But judging from the crowd reaction, I mean, Aaron Judge couldn't hit water falling out of the proverbial boat for a lot of the series, 7 consecutive strikeouts over a couple of games. You know, over that award 4 years, it's a team sport. You know, if this was tennis and their guy was robbed, but the Astros eliminated the Yankees from the playoffs in 2015, the wild card game, 2017, the cheat year in the ALCS, and then 2019 on the Altuve home run. The Altuve home run off Chapman, buzzer, no right. Buzzer. And there's no finding of a buzzer by Major League Baseball. So I guess if you want to be cute about it, beyond guard Yankee fans, it's an odd year. 2015, Astros took you out. 2017, Astros took you out. 2019, Astros took you out. SAT question, what's the next year in the sequence? 2021. And I think that in the case of the fans, number one, there's bitterness. There's which side is your bread buttered on. If the roles were reversed, right, Astros fans would be screaming holy hell about the Yankees probably years later. I just don't think with the same level of vitriol. But for the players, while they'll never forget, we never saw any beanball incident type stuff, a couple of pitches inside, but nothing unduly so. There was no target practice at Astro batters. And it's amazing, from 2017, there are only 5 Astros left, right, from that squad.
Right,
the five
right.
starting infielders, plus Lance McCullers, when you consider that Justin Verlander's not going to pitch this year. So thanks for the memories. I guess at some point the fan base will let it go. Probably never. But I think for the Yankee players themselves, what are they going to do? You can't unring the bell. You're not. There was never any question about the trophy being handed over. And it was the Yankee offense that did nothing in those games at Minute Maid Park in 2017. And 2019, there was no finding of cheating. And then there's the element of the backstory that while not to the extent, the breadth of the cheating of the Astros that was proven and admitted to by the Astros, but the Yankees and Red Sox had their little incidents earlier in 2017 as well. The Yankees using some video from their Yes Network telecast, the Red Sox with the Apple Watch. So there's definitely some holier-than-thou attached to it. And then the one last element, I think, Carla, is that for a lot of fans at the ball game, you just get caught up with something to do. I just thought all the bleep you chants, in part, replaced the wave as something for Yankee fans to do, including sometimes when the Yankees were up in the middle of mounting a rally. I guess whatever floats your boat. I don't know if it sinks to the level of shameful. It probably does. Maybe I missed it, but at Yankee Stadium over the course of the three games, not one public address announcement, not even one token item on the scoreboard that unacceptable language can result in ejection from the ballpark. Not that I would have anticipated them enforcing it, but to just take it as, well, this is par for the course. Even Aaron Boone, after the first game, talking about, wow, what a playoff environment, this was great, to not even address whatsoever, well, you might have dialed it back a little bit just from a potty mouth standpoint, if nothing else.
We're talking to Charlie Polillo. He's a radio show host on KFNC Houston. Okay, one of the other narratives, of course, is that the Yankees have Gerrit Cole, the standout pitcher that they took from the Astros, and the Astros were able to get the best of Cole and the Yankees last night. How satisfying was it to beat Cole, and do the Yankees have a rotation that gives you confidence about their plight this season?
Now, after Cole, it's one question mark after another, just as the Astros' rotation is full of question marks, guys, none of whom have had a good full Major League Baseball season in their career, save Zach Greinke. The Yankees are built to mash. Giancarlo Stanton went crazy in this series. Between he and Aaron Judge, will they do what they are paid to do and stay healthy? Both have had chronic injury problems. The Yankees have a good deep bullpen, though the Astros got to it yesterday. Cole, I don't think there's any resentment from the Astros about him leaving. 324 million reasons why. He was here 2 years. The Astros didn't win a World Series in either of them, as Gerrit Cole watched in the bullpen in Game 7 against the Nationals. But the Astros, you know, it was a trickle. They were not gushing, so they didn't need a tourniquet. But a nice Band-Aid after losing the first 2-3 games of the series would have made for an extra long home flight last night had they been swept out of the Bronx. So rather than a crumble in the Bronx, they lose 2 out of 3 and come home. And unfortunate subplot loss this weekend on the Astros side of things. George Springer on the injured list. Blue Jays are in Houston for the weekend, so we'll miss out on the opportunity to have the Houston fans react to Springer's return a bit more kindly than the Yankees welcomed Altuve for the first time since the 2019 ALCS.
Charlie, you talk about George Springer. Obviously, the Astros lost into free agency to Toronto with, you know, the largest free agent contract in Blue Jays history, and he spent all but 4 games this season on the IL. Do you think health for Springer is going to continue to be the biggest concern for him in 2021, and does this make it a little less painful for Astros fans that this is what he's going through?
I guess it should, not with any satisfaction. And, right. George Springer, you left us, now you got hurt. He's making $150,000 per game to not play for most of this season so far. But it's why the Astros, reasonably, for all Springer did for them, class act off the field, tremendous player on the field, 2017 World Series MVP. But he does have an injury history. He's played more than 140 games one time in his career, and none of those were in the last 3 years. He's 31 years old with a history of some leg injuries. Now, he's not a big base stealer, but when he loses some of his athleticism, the aging process, the wear and tear, he probably will no longer be a viable center fielder, at least once the back half of the contract rolls in for the Jays in a 6-year deal. Of course, the Astros have their problems in center field where Miles Straw's not been up to the task. They don't have a real good prospect on the horizon unless the Cuban kid they signed, Pedro León, who they have playing shortstop right now in the minors, turns out to be that guy. So it's bygones be bygones. Whenever Springer does suit up at Minute Maid Park, I would think he'd get a thunderous ovation. Right. The Blue Jays were trying to make the leap. They made a calculated risk. The back end of that contract could be a disaster, and of course, so far, the front end hasn't been very good either.
We're talking to Charlie Polillo, radio show host for KFNC Houston. All right, I want to shift to the other coast, the LA Dodgers. They've been in a bit of a swoon. Is this just a statistical swoon over the course of a long season, or do you see some red flags for the Dodgers?
I think you hit it with the former, David, more ebb and flow. From a 13-2 start,
yep,
they've now gone 4-13. The only long-term problem, I think, is if all the pitching injuries don't work themselves out. Dustin May is lost for the year, but Tony Gonsolin on the injured list, David Price on the injured list. Kershaw lasted only one inning in his start the other day, but Kershaw, Buehler, Bauer, the depth they have, the quality lineup they have, over 162 games. I doubt anyone yet takes the Giants particularly seriously, though credit to them leading that division over the Dodgers and Padres, the two IT teams of the National League West and the whole National League. I think the Dodgers are still the long play call to win that division.
Who is your biggest surprise team thus far in the year?
Well, until a week ago, it would have been the Kansas City Royals of all teams that had the best run in the American League, but now they've been in a free fall since. It seems like everyone in baseball is clustered within two or three games of 500. In the American League, I think every team is within five games of first place except for the Detroit Tigers, who are awful and are already nine games out. I would probably go with the Giants, pretty anonymous squad, and with all the hype to the emerging Dodgers-Padres rivalry, well, it's San Francisco with the early lead in the division, so I'd probably go with the Giants, and, well, why not the day after Willie Mays' 90th birthday?
Why not? And the Red Sox have been a bit of a surprise, too. Their pitching's been better than planned.
Yes. Yeah, I think that would be the American League team that, after losing the first three games, getting swept by the Orioles, and I'm sure all of New England was thinking, oh, boy, this is what we feared. The pitching, in contrast to the Dodgers have so much quality, proven pitching, you figure that water will find its level. In the Red Sox case, question mark after question mark after question mark, but the lineup is resurgent. J.D. Martinez, who went into an offensive coma in the short season, he couldn't watch his video in the dugout. He's back to mashing at an MVP level. And, you know, with the Yankees pitching question marks, Toronto's not a made man yet enough of a team. Those pesky Rays are floating around 500, but that's not the kind of squad you'll go out and make a big impact addition at the trade deadline. And even the Orioles are within one game of 500. So the American League East is it's a pretty balanced, solid division. I don't think it's going to take 95 wins plus to win that division this year, so maybe Boston can hang around.
He is Charlie Polillo. You can hear him on KFNC Houston 11-1 each weekday. You can also view his videos on sportsmap.com. Charlie, really appreciate your joining us here today.
Thank you.
Safe travels back.
All right, when we come back, well, there's some stats that now show one of the biggest things that happened in 2020.
Literally and figuratively.
We will come back to that when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Okay, this just in, huge breaking news in the world of cosmetic procedures. Some statistics on the most, well, it's the highest growing procedure in all the world, at least in the U.S. right now. You can go to breast implants, hair transplants, all these things, but the fastest growing procedure, can you name it?
Is it the booty?
It's the booty. You got to get the butt implant. You got to pack it in there. You got to make it big. You got to make it round. You got to make it firm. You got to get a butt implant. It's the fastest growing procedure in the U.S. today. How about that?
And who can we thank for that?
I'm going to, no, Kardashian?
Yes.
Is she the one?
Bingo. Are they the ones? Oh my gosh. Yes. Totally. I think they have changed the way of thinking. I mean, I have been
working
to not have a big booty.
Yeah, I thought it was to be lean, small, tight, not big,
my age clearly, which is not good. But now it's all about the shelf.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, Rod Culver, you're a connoisseur of women.
I thought you were going to say booties. Thank you for not going.
Well, he might be a connoisseur of booties. Ron, do you like the big booty? Do you like women with big-time butt implants?
No.
What?
I like natural. I don't be
Yay,
putting stuff
Ron.
In there.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't need to put you in that camp?
No, you don't need to go cosmetic.
All right, what about breast implants?
Oh, they're all right.
They're all right.
Okay, good.
There needs to be balance, though, right?
Ron.
You can't go one without the other.
You
got to
have yin and yang.
Yin and yang.
Yeah, and it is balanced, like, literally. Because you got to keep yourself upright. There's got to be a little cantilever there, here and there. But, you know, for those of you who want to try out the booty but don't want to go for the whole thing,
yes,
you can actually order. I have seen. There
yes.
are catalogs
Wait,
for
you have
leggings
seen, but you've...
that have a booty in them.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you put the pants on and they just got extra
yep.
cushion in there.
You can take them off at night, and if you don't like it, you don't have to do it.
This is not a personal endorsement.
No, it's not. I like I said, I've been working my whole life to not have a big booty.
Okay.
So I this is so confusing.
You're not going to wear pants that create a little pooch.
I'm going to try not to.
Okay.
I'm trying to get rid of my pooch. What are you saying?
Well, your pooch looks great.
Thank you. That's so kind, I think.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about a woman who doesn't need any help with a butt implant. She is getting a lot of attention. She's stealing some thunder from her son, who will be the quarterback of the New York Jets.
Oh, geez, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lisa Wilson, mother of Zach. She is a new social media sensation. Is she hot? Take a look. You can find her quickly just with a quick search. Lisa Wilson. We're going to unpack the phenomenon of Lisa Wilson hitting New York along with her son, Zach, when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.